You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Yeah, we're here for you Monday through Friday, you know, most weeks. This week, this might as well be two shows worth of stuff because we've got the NBA draft lottery, which, holy shit, New Orleans.
It's rigged.
Yeah, it's always rigged. And then we have Terry Rozier, which all of a sudden, Terry Rozier just ethering the Celtics and their situation all day long on ESPN suddenly is just like, feels like the second story. I don't know. This is just wild. So we're going to walk you through all of that stuff. We're the Raining Jays. I'm John Corrales. I cover the Celtics for MassLive.com, joined by Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Jam. That was a foghorn.
Yeah, I like that one. Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
Jam.
No effort on that one. A.K.A. Young Baby Jamwich.
Jam! This is getting ridiculous.
It's really getting ridiculous. We're going to add... Well, that just means we just got to add another nickname. So, all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's start with the draft lottery, because that just happened as far as, you know, it's the most recent thing to happen.
It's 1,000% rigged.
Oh, really? Yes, it is. It's totally rigged.
The NBA is paying back the Pelicans for having to deal with the Anthony Davis saga and just handed them Zion Williamson. It's a tale as old as time.
Yes, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. Shaking my fist.
But it's wild. It's absolutely insane.
Yes, I believe that the NBA is looking to prop up a small market team. The Pelicans are going to get, like, the whole thing coming into this draft was, how do the Pelicans get Zion Williamson? And it turns out they just got him. They just got him anyway. And that was just kind of nuts. You saw something crazy happening because the Pelicans had like a 6% chance they were supposed to land somewhere in the, I forget what their odds were. The best odds for the Pelicans were to get they're somewhere in the top four, but not the number one pick, probably the fourth pick. But they ended up getting number one. The Memphis Grizzlies, who had a 6% chance, got number two. The New York Knicks landed third, and the Lakers landed fourth. So let's just go with this. Initial reactions. How do you? What do you think from this? What's the initial thing from you out of this?
A big old Nelson Muntz to the New York Knicks organization for not getting Zion Williamson, because that's what they were banking on for the longest time. Now, that's not my initial reaction is, holy moly, how does this change the Anthony Davis trade sweepstakes? We've already seen Shams come out and tweet that it does not change his trade request. So he's likely still to be traded in the offseason. But it totally changes the landscape of kind of what can be offered to him. Because now the Knicks, if they wanted to offer Anthony Davis, and there's a lot of discussion about them offering, it was all about like them getting the top pick and then trading it or trading Zion to the Pelicans. Now the landscape's totally different, and it's like, what are the Pelicans looking for to go with Zion, to go with Drew Holiday, and things like that. And so I think a sneaky big thing about this draft lottery was actually the Lakers sneaking up and getting to the fourth pick, which makes their package for Anthony Davis that much more enticing. And so it's weird. This draft lottery was supposed to be all about Zion, but it's still all about Anthony Davis.
Yeah, it's wild. It takes the focus off of Zion because now we know that Zion's going to New Orleans and they're obviously going to keep him. And now they have to build around him. The question now really becomes, what do the Pelicans value more? Do they value having Tatum and or Brown? Now I feel like you got to offer both. Because I mean, not only
because the Lakers are going to come with Ingram and the number four pick and probably Lonzo and probably Kuzma, like the Lakers, if they were offered all of that package last year and then add the four pick on top of that, the Celtics really got to like come with an offer if they want to like kind of enter the AD sweepstakes.
Yeah, it really and I don't know. I really don't know that they have anything. So. It really depends now on what David Griffin values and how he wants to build around Zion. So you've got your future star. You've got your point guard. You've got now. So I assume they're going to keep Jrue Holiday. I don't see any reason to move him now. So you want to have. You want to have some wings, and maybe you want to have somebody, maybe some sort of big or something. So, is there somebody in this draft, or does maybe the Memphis Grizzlies pick, which didn't convey, which now gets them possibly Ja Morant, does that bring some value, and does the fact that they can get Morant take away from some of that value because he's good and he's going to make them better?
Or does it make it more likely that they move on from Mike Conley, making them worse next year and then making that like pick more valuable in the immediate future?
Yep. That's also,
it's all sorts of crazy scenarios. And the thing that's wild about Zion ending up with the Pelicans is that he is like I imagine him as a wing player who you're going to want to put with either you're going to want to put some shooting around him with some guards or a tall, lanky big man. You know, who would look really nice next to him is Anthony Davis.
Anthony Davis, great fit.
Really the perfect fit. But it's like Tatum and Ingram, who feel like the kind of the centerpieces of these packages are, I don't want to say redundant because that's a whole league of swing. That you can't have too many guys who are that like size, but it's like how many you'd want some sort of positional versatility, positional diversity, and it's like Zion plays like basically I would assume the same position as both Tatum and Ingram. So is it valuing outside shooting? Is it getting a guard like Jaylen Brown in there? I don't know. I have no idea what the Pelicans like what the ideal scenario is for the Pelicans right there. Do you want to, like, now that you're basically Zion is your franchise guy, are you trying to get more picks to kind of align with his, like, because now your timeline is basically directly associated with Zion, and so are you just trying to get more picks so you can get guys to kind of be alongside him? Is Ingram too far along because you don't want to pay Ingram or Jaylen Brown like 2 years from now and give them that full extension because you want to have money free for Zion? I don't know. I haven't been able to fully crunch numbers. This was the first year I didn't actually watch the draft lottery, so I'm still trying to process it all, but it's wild. Wild stuff.
I think I'm just trying to, because this is all very fresh. It's all, I haven't really put it all together yet. So you've got Williamson, who I think in the NBA right now projects out to be more of a four. I don't think he's got NBA range. He's not a shooter, so he's not really a wing player. He's more of a big that can play on the wing versus a wing that can play big. If you guys understand,
yeah, you could easily slide Ingram to or Tatum next to him. More I think about it,
yeah. So if you're looking, I'm just trying to think of what New Orleans. What are they looking to do here? if they're going to trade Anthony Davis and they're building around Zion, Zion's a rookie. So you want some level of experience around him, but not too much. So that is where guys like Ingram and Tatum and Brown come in as guys that are a year or two away from their restricted free agency. You want to get some picks. Now the question is, you get the fourth pick, let's say, from the Lakers, and you get, I don't know, Cam Reddish, or so it depends on what your trade is.
That's another thing, though, is the fourth pick in this draft, which is basically Zion, Ja Morant, and then maybe Art. Like, it's a very from all I hear, is not the greatest or the draft with the most depth. So how much value does that fourth pick really have compared to the future pick, which could be anything?
Even a fourth pick. So
yeah,
it's hard to say. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And I admittedly, I'm not the biggest college guy, so I don't know exactly the after you get like from the stars. Like I do know that I kind of like Cam Reddish, just from some of the things that I saw, but I know he's not projected very high. I'm looking at him as, you know, lower top 10 pick. There are
some people hate him. Some people think he's not going to be great. I think I've also heard Culver, the guy from Texas Tech, who's just like a solid defensive player, and like maybe you build like draft, you want that guy in the same year as Zion to like come in, but then also. With the four pick, you could have a guy who's also like was Zion's teammate at Duke, so maybe there's like value there. I don't know. It's hard to project what the Pelicans want.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is you don't want too many picks in the same draft, because, and this hurts the Celtics because they have a lot of picks in the same draft. What you really don't want, now that you've got Zion and you're looking to bring in more picks, then you're financially, you don't want three or four guys to come up at the same time, because then you start to have decisions to make. Because some guys maybe not developing at the same time, and you don't want to have to be like, well, we're going to keep these two and we're going to let these two go because we don't want to pay everybody at the same time. So it might be better for New Orleans to get later picks. And that doesn't help really from the Celtics, because the Celtics are going to be good for a little while, theoretically. I mean, I don't know how this changes, what this changes. Maybe getting the fourth pick is good, and then you get Knox, and you get, I don't know, whoever else the Knicks might offer. Then you have...
If you have Dennis Smith Jr.
Yeah, right?
Woo!
But do they want him and... And Jrue Holiday, or
that's another thing. It's like, does that weaken the Lakers? Because it's like, now, do they want anything to do with Lonzo Ball? Like, do they want Kyle Kuzma next to Zion? I don't know. Kyle Kuzma could be a nice little player, but then you're playing with like a really very small lineup. I'm excited for the next like basically month before the draft, where it's everyone giving their evaluations of what the best package is, and it's not really going to be based on what they think the best package is. It's just whatever they like the best outcome is for their personal team. So everyone's just going to be advocating that the Celtics clearly have the best package, but that's just because they want to get Anthony Davis. But it's like, who knows at this point?
Yeah. I just don't know that the Celtics have the best package now. It really depends on what the Pelicans value. Like before, if the Hawks had gotten Zion, then it would have been different, because then the best player that the Pelicans would have gotten would have come down to, do you believe it's Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or Kyle Kuzma or Brandon Ingram or whatever? Like, what we were basing the Celtics' best package on was, well, they have the best player to give the Pelicans. Well, now the Pelicans have the best player. All of a sudden, what the Celtics' best player to offer, that doesn't matter as much anymore. Now they're looking for pieces that complement Zion. And sure, Tatum is a guy, and Brown, they're both guys that can complement Zion, but now you're building in New Orleans around packages that are different than what we were thinking coming in. So what do the Pelicans want to do with Jrue Holiday? Do they want to move him now? Or do they want to have that veteran presence? Because he's a really good guy to have. He's a solid pro that works his ass off. Like, that's a great example to have on that team. And he knows the city. Like, that, I'd want to keep him. But at the same time, if you're building a team, do you want to move him to a team that's looking to win now and bring back more assets and stagger your assets Danny Ainge style, so you've got maybe a pick a year from now or a lottery pick 2 years from now, and you take a team like, I don't know, the Denver Nuggets that is good, but then maybe in 2 years, maybe things go wrong, or maybe Toronto that you roll with that. Some team that is potentially not going to be good in 2 years, that may be rebuilding in 2 years, and those might not be great examples, but like, do you move that guy for and then stagger your picks, and now all of a sudden, once Zion is 2, 3, 4 years in the league, you're adding a rookie, a second-year player to build around him, and you're staggering all those salaries. Like, there's something to be said about that. So the dynamic changes so significantly with the Pelicans winning this draft lottery. I mean, the possibilities just keep popping into my head. It's just too much to process.
All I know is that I'm going to be spending the next month on the trade machine, just constantly coming up with kooky fake trades. I already got some real wacky ideas cooking, and so it's going to be a lot of fun. It's officially fake trade season, and I'm excited to evaluate everyone's dumbest idea, because that's what NBA Twitter is going to be until the draft.
It's going to be crazy. I do think that this does open the door, speaking of Denver, for a team with some good young players like the Nuggets to throw a deal together for Anthony Davis in a win now move, because now you've got your rookie, your veteran, and a couple of young players, you know, Murray, Harris, I don't know who, but like guys that are younger, but a little bit more. I don't know. I'm talking this whole thing through. I don't know what makes sense anymore. I'll tell you what. We'll take a break. Listen to the Locked On NBA, because I'm going to hop on Locked On NBA after we're done recording the show, after the Warriors game is over, and talk to Jake Madison, my co-host on Locked On NBA. He's the host of Locked On Pelicans. So he's going to give me the entire Pelicans perspective. He's a guy that's going to know what the Pelicans are going to want. So I'm going to take a breather here. Check out Locked On NBA, because that's going to give us a lot more perspective with me and Jake, and then we'll figure it out. When we come back, Terry Rozier, last thing off on ESPN. Holy shit, there's more to talk about there. We'll be right back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Did basically a whole podcast on the draft lottery. We had Terry Rozier going on every ESPN show all day long, talking
the full car wash.
I mean, really, seriously, just talking to everybody about how bad things were for him in Boston. Just too many quotes for me. Like, I'm not going to read all of them. Basically, what he said was, "We couldn't put it together. We had a ton of talent, but we couldn't figure it out on the floor. And I sacrificed way too much, and now I'm done sacrificing. I'm going to whatever team wants me." That I think sums everything up in a neat little bow. Now let's dive deeper into what he said.
He also talked about touches and like having to, and the coach's approach to Kyrie, yeah, and Gordon Hayward.
There's a lot to unpack. So what's the one thing that stood out most? Was there one thing?
there wasn't one specific quote because they just kept coming. But it was just, the one thing about Terry Rozier that makes him enigmatic and like an endearing personality is his kind of honesty and his willingness to be just like tell it as it is. And so there was nothing, there were some confusing quotes about how like Kyrie, like they would play 5-on-5 and the first unit and the second unit would get confused. Like the second unit would get confused. And I didn't realize, like, I didn't really understand what he was trying to say either. Like, he was trying to say that like the rotation got mixed up and they didn't like play with the second unit anymore. Or I saw another interpretation that when the second unit played with Kyrie, since they had no experience playing with him, Kyrie would just improvise and that would throw things off for the second unit. That was kind of a confusing statement. And then there was the whole statement about touches. And then I saw about 30,000 tweets about like going to NBA.com and seeing his usage rate or like actual stats calculating touches versus Gordon Hayward. And I don't know. I thought the whole exercise was a bit ridiculous. So it was basically Terry Rozier coming out and saying, you know, this team that you've been complaining about for the past 8 months because of their poor chemistry. We had some poor chemistry and it really didn't work out. So it wasn't like the most surprising thing in the world. It's just Terry Rozier being Terry Rozier. I just appreciate the fact that he went for a full ESPN car wash. He was on every single show. And that's just not something you see any other restricted free agent in the league doing. But Tito's out there just talking to everyone. That's about him getting his brand up. So I kind of respect him. He's just posting his way through it.
That's one way to look at it. I'm shocked at why his agent would let him out there to do all of these things. Like, this really was burning it down to the ground, in my opinion, with him and the Celtics. Like, if Kyrie leaves, everybody's talking about him going back to the Celtics, and he said he would be open to it, but, like, how do the Celtics bring him back after this? Like, it just feels like...
Can you imagine, though, Danny Ainge just, like, sitting back and like laughing at all the controversy that Terry Rozier is creating right now?
Yeah.
I feel like they have some, like, a weird perverse sense of humor where it's just like, oh, Terry's going to be Terry.
Yeah. But I think part of the problem is that when Terry is Terry, sometimes that becomes problematic. And it just, to me, I looked at him going out there and it's just like, it just told me, it did. It confirmed a lot about the.
Didn't it touch on things that like we've all thought about? It's like, oh, there was like some special treatment for Gordon Hayward at the start of the season that kind of like pissed off, the, like rubbed players the wrong way. That's like confirmed. Like, that's like pretty obvious. Then he's also talking about playing with Kyrie and how Kyrie's going to play the way Kyrie's going to play. And like, he's a good guy, but everyone else has to kind of adjust to that. Yeah, that exactly confirms like kind of our suspicions about what was going on and like kind of how people were adjusting to Kyrie's, I guess, leadership or lack thereof. It was a weird move to kind of air all the dirty laundry, but I guess like I think it's things that we already kind of knew were out there, and so ultimately I'm not mad. It's funny to me. I'm actually laughing.
With your hot wife?
Yeah, exactly. She's here too.
I get it. A lot of it is confirming things that we seem to have known. It feels off having it come from Terry Rozier. Like, if someone else, I don't know, pick a reporter came out and said, all of these things are true, blah, 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 blah. We'd be like, yeah, we kind of figured that. We knew some of it. We figured that was true. For Terry Rozier to come out, though, it carries something different. Because for Terry Rozier to say something like, oh, yeah, we had the starting unit and then we had the bench unit. But in the game, it was guys mixed together. Like, for me, I hear that and say, well, yeah, you practice first unit versus second unit. And then you learn the play, you learn what's supposed to be happening, and then whomever is on the floor at the same time, like, just because you practiced with Jaylen Brown next to you and you get in the game and now it's Kyrie Irving next to you, so? So? Like, that's
That's, yeah, that comment really didn't make much sense.
No, it doesn't make sense at all. For him to say, oh, yeah, you know, we practice these things, and in the game there's different guys. Like,
But so I saw people saying, trying to interpret that, saying, like, we practice these things, and then, like, playing with Kyrie, Kyrie went rogue, and so it was, like, a hard to adjust for those guys. And so I don't know what to really make of that. Terry had so many different quotes coming out of the day that it's really hard to interpret. But, like, is this better than, like, I feel like this is healthier or better with Terry actually attaching his name to it than, like, a Steve Bulpet column at the end of the year where it's like Celtics sources close to the situation, and then it's like revealing like all these problems with the team. It's like,
sure,
it's the Brad Stevens thing. Was like, if you're gonna say it, like, put your name out there and say it. So I guess I kind of like, I respect him for like that move rather than like leaking to one of you guys in the media.
To one of you guys.
Yeah.
I get it. And sure, of course, you put your name on it, then you have accountability. I don't understand why people are interpreting this as if we didn't watch this season. Like, we can see what was happening. So this wild interpretation of what Terry Rozier was trying to say with, oh, yeah, it was different when we were out there. Like, Kyrie played the same way all year long. Kyrie didn't, I don't think.
He was good.
Yeah.
Kyrie had his best season ever.
Yeah. I don't think I saw, like, I feel like one of us, me, you, Jay, would have said, huh, when Kyrie's out there with the second unit, he really plays differently. And when he's out there with the starters, he plays pretty well. And something goes, like, not once, not nobody.
The problem was when Kyrie was off the floor and Al Horford was off the floor, the second unit was garbage.
Right. Right.
And that shouldn't be anything to do with practice. Like, that's just, it's just like a weird.
So I'm calling bullshit on Terry Rozier, or that interpretation of what Terry Rozier was saying. I think that Terry Rozier was just flat out saying, we did this something in practice, and it didn't go exactly like that in the game, and everybody got confused. Like,
well, that makes like a lot of sense where, in terms of, you think of like the Celtics offense this year, where it's like, I don't think they practiced all the shitty jump shots in the early shot clock. Like, it would make sense, but I don't know. I think it's also Terry Rozier was on air for what, 4 hours today? Of course, yeah. He's going to say some nonsense. We've been talking for 25 minutes and half the things I've said haven't made any sense.
I just, yeah. True. That's part
yep.
of the course.
Can't fight that logic.
Can't fight that one. Nope. But if you really think about what Terry Rozier said, to me, all Terry Rozier said was, Brad said some things, and we didn't follow what Brad said, or we tried. We were kind of together in the locker room, but we, once we got on the floor, we couldn't put it together. Like, that tells me just they refused to do what they were told to do. If you go through practice and you're in the locker room and everybody's like, okay, yeah, we got the plan, we did it, and you go on the floor and you suddenly were like, oh yeah, we got on the floor, and all of a sudden we just couldn't figure it out. Like, you're professional basketball players. Your job is to figure it out. This isn't rocket science. Like,
yep.
Stevens is good, but he's not drawing up fucking crazy. He's not reinventing the wheel. It's a read and react offense. You read and you react. It's not difficult. To say you went out there and were like, yeah, God, I got so confused when we're out there because suddenly things were different. Like, figure it out. Pull-up jump shots in transition were not being done in practice. Why was that happening so often from Terry Rozier? Because Terry Rozier, admittedly, had money on his mind. He was out there trying to figure out how to get his. That's the reality of everything Terry Rozier was talking about. And all this does to me, all this does today, is put an inordinate amount of blame on Terry Rozier. Like, he was trying to bullshit us today. I think he went on ESPN, and it sounded like honesty, but I think he was really trying to bullshit us and trying to make himself look like the victim. And he, when you watch the season and see it, you're like, no, none of this stuff that you said was happening actually happened. All that happened was young guys thought they were too good. Young guys thought they were better than they are. They couldn't fall in line behind Kyrie. They couldn't fall in line behind Gordon Hayward because Gordon Hayward was too hurt to be able to fall, have somebody fall behind him in line. So everybody got pissed off. People got pissed off that Gordon Hayward had to be worked back the way he did. And guys like Terry Rozier, he's not the only one, but he's the guy who gets all the focus today, went out there and were like, screw it, I'm going to go for my own thing because I'm awesome, I think I'm awesome, or I'm looking for money. And it didn't work because they couldn't all get on the same page. They weren't playing for each other. They wanted to win, but they wanted to win their own way. They wanted to get their own stats. They wanted to do it themselves. That was the problem we saw in game 10. It was the problem that we saw in game 94 or whatever. Nothing changed. And Terry Rozier, to spin it any other way, it's bullshit.
Hear, hear.
Anyway. We're going to take a break and come back about talk about something else because we're going to keep on talking. We got one more.
I got a kooky idea. I got a crazy trade idea.
Ooh, kooky, crazy trade idea. Come back. Hey, if you're a new listener, subscribe to us on the new Himalaya podcast app, wherever podcasts exist. Go ahead and ask your smart speaker, smart device to play podcast Locked On Celtics. We're coming right back. We were promised before the break a kooky trade idea. So, go ahead, Jam. It's all yours.
All right. File this under the half-baked idea award. And so the main idea of this trade, there's two main goals. I guess three main goals. Now, goal number one is trading for Anthony Davis. Goal number two is trading for Anthony Davis without having to trade Marcus Smart. And so Marcus Smart plays an interesting role in this because in order to match salaries with Anthony Davis, he's really the only mid-range salary that the Celtics have. And so if you want to like get a package, he's like pretty central to just matching that Anthony Davis number. So three, here's where my idea comes in. Is there any way that the New Orleans Pelicans would take back Gordon Hayward's contract in addition to Tatum and whatever picks for Anthony Davis, and you'd have to put in Solomon Hill in there? Is there a way the Celtics can get out from Gordon Hayward's contract? It's only 2 years. If it was Hayward and Tatum, it'd be a 2-year deal. And then by the time you had to basically sign Tatum to his extension, Hayward's money would be off your books. I don't know who else the Pelicans are going to give that money to. I think it's a great idea. And then you basically, this one of the Celtics' main problems is there's too many guys and not enough, I guess, minutes, or the roles weren't working out. You kind of thin out the ranks and you just go with you play your stars. And this is all assuming that Kyrie Irving comes back, and it's a Kyrie AD with Al Horford as your glue guy. Thoughts?
I don't think they would take Hayward. I don't.
It's like a pretty low risk. There is reward there. Like, what if he just comes back and is an all-star, and then you have him just kind of being the veteran around Zion? I don't know. He could be your ball handler.
But you might as well just keep Solomon Hill. I mean, their whole point is to get Solomon Hill off the books, and he's done after.
But Solomon Hill's season. Never like going to be great. Yeah. There is potential for Hayward to be a great player again. We saw signs of it. Maybe him working out for a full summer, he could be back. I don't know. I tweeted this out earlier, and I got responses saying like, "Oh, the Celtics would never do this." That's poppycock. Like, they'll do anything. They traded Isaiah Thomas. Like, this is not abandoning Gordon Hayward. They're gonna give him the opportunity to earn $30 million a year for the next 2 years in some other NBA city. I don't see like the hesitation being on the Celtics front. I'm just trying to think of a way, because that Hayward contract is just not – if he doesn't come back, to where he is, you got it. There's got to be a way to like get out from underneath it, because it is, he's the highest paid player on the Celtics at this point. I mean, if they re-sign Kyrie, I think he would jump him, but just to get to, for just sheer roster construction, to pay $30 million to a guy who we have no idea if he's going to be the same again. I would explore options trying to get out from under that contract. And so this is exactly what I said was going to happen in the first segment. I'm just trying to prop up a package that results in what I want to happen, and it's got nothing to do with what the Pelicans want.
Yeah, I don't
tell that one to Jake Madison. He's going to laugh you off the podcast.
Sure. Yeah, I think so. I
told you it was a half-baked idea.
No, that's your lane. That's your full of half-baked ideas.
This is a juncture idea if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, I don't know that there's an actual trade package that centered around Gordon Hayward. I don't see it. I just don't.
This idea also came to me before the whole lottery thing, and now that Zion's there, it doesn't make sense to put Tatum and Hayward in the same starting lineup as Zion. Like, that's kind of the redundancy thing. So, it's kind of ruined, but I don't feel good about paying Gordon Hayward $30 million a year to be not good.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like, really, I remember a year ago we were talking about Marcus Smart. They signed him to this deal, and it's a very tradable deal. This was the purpose of signing Marcus Smart to that deal. And now Marcus Smart, after this season, after shooting well or well enough and just having the season that he had in the midst of all this craziness, Marcus Smart has now been elevated to the point where I don't want to trade Marcus Smart.
No, it's the heart. It's the heart and the soul.
Right. But really, if you want to do this, you
talent wise, yeah, you trade Marcus Smart in a second. But it pains me to say that.
You could easily get a package together with Smart, Tatum, Robert Williams, and then you add. That alone gets you close. But to pull off this deal, the Celtics would have to pull the deal off before the trade, before the draft. So they would still have to draft, let's say, the 14th pick. It would require the Celtics to give up that Memphis pick and then all of the other picks that they have. So if they had all of the other picks, let's see, I have it calculated over here real quick. They have $8.5 million. So the 14th, the 20th, and the 22nd pick are worth $8.4 million in trade aggregation. So those guys can be signed and then traded. So you can throw together a deal for Anthony Davis, who makes $25 million. You can throw, so 25 minus what I say, 8.4, he makes 25.4, so that's $18 million. So you can do that with
17.
Tatum, $17 million. You can do that with
Tatum. Basically get them Tatum and Smart and you're there.
Yep, you can do that. If you wanted to keep Smart, you can do Tatum and Brown, that's 11. And then
you got to throw in Yabu and Robert.
Yabu and, yeah, like you could fill it out that way. But you could easily get there with Smart and one of the other guys. You could do Smart, the three picks, Tatum or Brown, and if you wanted to add Solomon Hill, then you could start mixing in some of these other guys. But I don't think the Celtics would do that. So anyway, there's a deal there to be had, and you can do that with the. If they take all three picks, if they want all three picks, you can aggregate that salary in. Again, because you can't make the trade until after July 1st. You can't actually consummate the trade on the draft night.
Yes. Consummate. What a sexy word.
Yes. Because
how many times are we going to talk about fake Anthony Davis trades from now until the
every
draft?
Day. Every single day. Every single one. Maybe twice.
I'm for it. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll just record two podcasts a day.
That sounds about right. And then Jay's going to get real upset after like 1 week of it.
Oh, he'll be out like 2.5 days in. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
Until it actually happens, bro.
All right. Let's wrap it up there. Because we're going to talk about this a lot. And there's going to be a lot to talk about. And a ton of rumors coming up from this over the course of however many weeks it is until the draft. Lord knows what's going to happen. So we'll be here to talk about it. Every twist and turn is going to happen here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So go ahead and subscribe. Use that new Himalaya podcast app. Everywhere podcasts exist, we exist too. And then subscribe or tell your smart device, your smart speaker, your car to play podcast Locked On Celtics. And then all of you regular listeners, give us that 5-star rating, good review. Tell the world to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked On Celtics.